The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you and welcome back again to Bible Shots in our little offside room. I'll try to make sure I speak loud enough so that when the buses and the trucks go past, it's not a problem. When I was growing up, my family used to go on holidays to Nelson Bay, just north of Newcastle. And one year we decided to do a whale watching tour, and I was very excited at the prospect of seeing some whales up close. And as the ship got underway and left the harbour, I went to the very top of the boat where I could really experience the full force of the up and the down of the ship as it was going through the sea. The up and the down, the up and the down. I was loving it until I wasn't. It was like a switch flipped in my body with the snap of a finger, and suddenly I was nauseous, and I spent the rest of the trip in the belly of the ship, sweaty, grey, hating life. It was not fun. But despite that, in the middle of it all, I kept remembering the bigger picture. The trip would end, I would get back to shore, there may be ups and downs, I may feel nauseous, but sooner or later, we'd be back on solid ground. The boat and the captain would get me there. I was confident they would get me there. Now, I was able to trust the captain and the boat in the mild seas off Australia's mid-central coast. But today we're considering, is there security in the midst of the ups and downs of life? It's a relevant question for us today. Australia is a nation that struggles with stress and anxiety. The Australian Psychological Society conducts a regular survey of stress and well-being in Australia, and the results from 2015, which was the most recent survey they did, identified that about two-thirds of the Australian population report either above normal levels of anxiety or significant levels of distress in their lives. And the top causes of stress in Australia were personal finances, relationships, and health. And when it comes to these significant areas of our lives, many of us, as well as our colleagues, our friends, and our family, we are anxious. We feel anxious. We don't feel secure. And if you think about it, it's probably not surprising if we feel anxious and insecure about these things, because we live in an uncertain world and there is much outside of our control. Sure, there are things that we can do to influence our finances, our relationship, and our health. We can provide some buffers against some of the problems, but there is still much that remains outside our control. There is understandable reason for feeling insecure. Yet when we heard Martin read the psalm that we're looking at today, just a bit earlier, David sounds very secure. He sounds very secure despite the fact that he lived some 3,000 years ago without access to many of the buffers over life and its uncertainties that we have today. David is secure. And in fact, he's very confident in his security, which raises for us the question we're grappling with today. Can we have security amidst the ups and downs of life? In case you missed Martin's welcome before, let me add to it. Welcome to Bible Shots. I'm glad you are here today. You've joined us for the second talk in our series, Words of the Warrior Poet, called Words of the Warrior Poet because we're looking at some of the Psalms of David. And Psalms are basically poems in the Bible. And David, who wrote many of the Psalms and wrote the ones that we're looking at, was also a warrior. He, in fact, became the king of Israel in the lead up to its golden age, hence Words of the Warrior Poet. But David also struggled with many of the big problems that we still face today. Many of his psalms touch on issues of the bigger questions of life. And so today we are considering, in Psalm 23, the warrior poet versus death and suffering. Or more specifically, is it possible to have security even in the lowest lows of death and suffering? At Bible Shots we set some time aside in the middle of our week to think about the Bible and what it means for us today. Not all of us here would say we're followers of Jesus, though many of us are. But as long as you're willing to consider what the Bible has to say, you're welcome. We're glad to have you here as we consider this part of the Bible and what it contributes to a discussion of suffering and death. And the Bible does have a lot to say about suffering and death. In fact, many of the Psalms talk about suffering and death, and there's a lot more to say than we can say today. So we're today focusing on one particular psalm, one particular part of the Bible, and its contribution to a wider discussion. Particularly if you come along today and you're in the midst of a really dark season yourself, I do hope there is something encouraging and comforting that you see here, but there is also only so much we can cover in a 20-minute talk. You might like to talk further afterwards, either after the session or maybe let us know via the feedback form. We'd love to grab a coffee or spend some time sitting down with you if you'd like to talk further. Today we're considering Psalm 23 and can we have security in the highs and lows of life? And we're going to think about this question in three main sections. We're going to look at David's security, then David's confidence, and finally, security and confidence today. There are three main points. So first, David's security, and we're going to focus on what Psalm 23 says. But before we focus on what Psalm 23 says, I actually want you to do something different to what we do at Bible Shops normally. Take 30 seconds and chat with the person next to you. You could introduce yourself if you don't know them. If you are really just wanting to kind of sit here by yourself and keep thinking, that's okay. Maybe, you know, cross your arms and look thoughtful. And we'll just accept that that's kind of the signal that I just want to be left alone, and that's okay. But chat with the person next to you about, if you were going to have an animal represent you, what would it be and why? Just take 30 seconds. If you were an animal and represented by an animal in a poem, what would it be and why? 30 seconds. All right, well, we'll start to wrap it up there. We'll wrap that up there. So, you know, maybe if you've got a question in question time, you could open by letting us know what sort of animal you were or something like that. But I'd love to hear what your animals are, but just for the sake of time, the animal I would pick for myself is a great white shark. Great white shark. And I mean, I think the reasons are pretty obvious. I mean, firstly, it's an apex predator. I mean, you know you're going to be achieving things when you're an apex predator. Not only that, it has essentially a superpower. It can sense the electromagnetic fields given off by the movement of other animals. And if you have to be sneaky and stealthy and hunt, how helpful would it be to be able to stand still and just sense where people are moving around you? Also, it has a bite force 25 times stronger than a person. I reckon a great white shark is a pretty impressive animal if you had that represent you. What I would definitely not pick is a sheep. I would not pick a sheep. But that's what David implies he and we are in the psalm. Now, we don't see many sheep in Sydney beyond going to the Easter show or maybe the occasional petting zoo, but even we know sheep are pretty helpless. They need help with everything. They need to be directed where to go. They need to have food provided for them. And they need to be protected from threats. They're completely dependent. I don't like the idea of being a sheep. But when you think about it, there is something about that image of a sheep that rings true. We depend for others. We depend on others to provide for us. Just think about the number of people involved in getting your bowl of Weet-Bix to you this morning from the field where it grew. We depend on others to guide us. Most often in a screen with a voice that's neutral and says, in 200 metres, turn right onto the Great Western Highway. But also, we need people to help direct us into how to do jobs and tasks well and in a good or ethical way. We also depend on others to protect us, whether it's at a national level in the military or maybe at a more local level with the police. We depend on others to protect us as well. We are, when you think about it, like sheep. We depend on others to provide, guide, and protect us. And when we look at Psalm 23, though, actually we see that the source of David's security is the one he's dependent on. The source of David's security is God. Because as God pictures him as a shepherd and a host, we see David is secure because God provides, he guides, and he protects. Have a look at the text of the psalm. First, God provides for David. Verse 1, the Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. Or verse 5, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil and my cup overflows. David claims God is the shepherd who provides for him. He lacks nothing. He is provided with nourishment. God provides for David. But also God guides. Verse 2, he makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths. God guides David to where he needs to be. David claims God is the shepherd who guides him in the way he is to go. But finally, also, God protects. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. David claims God is the shepherd who protects. That's part of what the imagery of the rod and the staff means. Even when facing dark and terrifying times with the threat of death, David believes God is with him. David is secure in the ups and downs of life because he trusts God is the one who provides, guides, and protects. And one of the things that is so impressive to me in this psalm is just how David's confidence in God, it radiates off the page. But that makes me wonder, why is David so confident? Why is David confident? In fact, he is so supremely over-the-top confident, it makes me wonder, is he really worth listening to here? So we're going to dig a little bit deeper into the psalm and think about, well, why is David confident? Is David just confident because of inexperience? One of the fun things about the start of the year in the city is all the new grads starting. There's so much hope and enthusiasm among them. It's sweet. It's endearing. And, I look at new grads starting and I just can't help but wonder, oh, how long until you're crushed and jaded like the rest of us? How long until reality really hits you? And part of me wonders, is that what is going on in Psalm 23? Are these just the musings and reflections of someone who hasn't experienced how hard life can be? Well, actually, we need to remember this is a psalm of David. It's there in the title. The text wants us to read the psalm with David in mind. Now, in case you're not familiar with the story of David, life wasn't exactly smooth sailing for him. David was raised as a shepherd who faced the realities of having to fight off wild animals who would prey on his flock. When he was still young, he was conscripted into the service of Saul, the man who was the ruler of the land at the time. And Saul took an intense disliking to David. He tried to kill him on several occasions. So David actually had to spend years of his life both on the run from Saul, the king who was trying to kill him, and fighting against Israel's enemies, the nations around her that kept fighting against Israel. The early part of David's life was not a walk in the park. But the later parts of his life weren't a walk in the park either. One of David's children died just after it was born. Another of his sons, Absalom, he led a rebellion against his father, which meant David had to flee for his life. It forced David into a conflict with his son that ended in his son dying. David is not someone who is a stranger to hardship, suffering, and death. Psalm 23 does not come from the perspective of someone with no idea about how tough life can be. We see that David is confident, but it's not because of inexperience. Or maybe it's because David earned it. We know that if someone is particularly skilled or talented or successful, they can be supremely confident. Is David confident because he was just so successful at doing what God wanted him to do? Well, again, when we remember that this is a psalm of David, I think the answer is no. We heard last week, and we'll be looking more closely next week, that David actually dropped the ball massively here. David was guilty of adultery and murder. He had large black marks against his name. If his confidence was based on his ability to please God, well, David didn't have a leg to stand on. I actually think the answer is in verse 3. He guided me along the right paths for his name's sake. David is confident that God provides, guides, and protects him because God keeps his promises. That's what the phrase "for his name's sake" is getting at. When we read the psalm with David in mind, it invites us to remember what God promised David, that he would make David king and that, like we heard last week, one of David's offspring would rule forever. The question that naturally follows on, though, is, well, can God's promises be trusted? David's confidence wasn't because he earned it, but actually, I think David's confidence was because of the evidence that God kept his promises. You see, despite the hardships David faced in his early life, God kept his promise that David would be king. The road was not smooth, it was not trouble-free, it was nauseatingly up and down, but God kept his promise to David. He made him king, and I suspect David wants his readers to remember that. But I don't think David's just thinking about himself. The language of the psalm actually causes an alert reader who knows the rest of their Old Testament to remember God's promises to Israel to rescue them from Egypt and bring them into the promised land. So, for example, Exodus chapter 15, just after the Israelites have come through the Red Sea in their exodus from Egypt, Moses sings this song, and he says, you know, in your unfailing love, you will lead the people you have redeemed. In your strength, you will guide them to your holy dwelling. You can see some of the echoes of the language there in Psalm 23 that we were looking at before. But it's not just that. In Numbers 21, as Israel's wandering in the wilderness, they spoke against God and Moses, saying, why have you brought us up here out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? There's no bread, there's no water, and we detest this miserable food. They were complaining. And when this is reflected on later in the Old Testament, the question is raised. They spoke against God and they said, can God really spread a table in the wilderness? When he had done, when he had provided for them. In Jeremiah, one of the prophets, he, looking back on the event, says, you know, they didn't ask, where is the Lord who brought us up out of the land of Egypt and led us through the barren wilderness, through a land of deserts and ravines, a land of drought and utter darkness, a land where no one travels and no one lives. There's this kind of intersection of language in the Old Testament where the exodus from Egypt and the travel through the wilderness, a land of death and barrenness surrounded by enemies, gets used with this language. It evokes this memory of God promising to bring his people out of Egypt to the promised land and would get them there. David is causing his readers to remember, hey, God did this in the past. He achieved his promises even though there are ups and downs. We've seen David's security is in God. We've seen David's confidence is in God's promises, backed up by the evidence. He looks at what God has done. So what about security and confidence today? Well, we may have more sophisticated and widely available buffers against some of life's uncertainties, but we still live in an uncertain world. The economy fluctuates, sickness and death are still problems. Our jobs, even jobs that we like, can suddenly, for reasons outside our control, become uncertain and unpleasant. We can quickly go from enjoying life and all that is good about it to being in strange waters that actually leave us reeling. Does David's confidence offer us any grounds for security and confidence today? And I want to suggest, yes, the psalm invites us to consider what God has promised us and why we can be confident. What has God promised us? One of Jesus' followers, John, records Jesus' words. He says, don't let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. My Father's house has many rooms. If that weren't so, would I have told you I'm going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. See, in Jesus, God promises eternal life in his dwelling place to all those who trust Jesus, which is also what David was looking forward to at the end of the psalm. God doesn't promise a trouble-free life now. In fact, if you're a follower of Jesus, we expect pain and hardship. But followers of Jesus can be confident that eternity is secure. It is secure if we trust Jesus. And like David, it's not about us being good enough or earning a spot in heaven. John also records that Jesus said, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. See, if eternal security, if a place in God's dwelling place was based on what we do, if we had to earn our place there, well, actually none of us could do it. But Jesus is the good shepherd who lays down his life for us, and he did it when he died on the cross so that we could be guided and protected through the valley of the shadow of death so that we could have eternal life. And like David, we can consider the evidence. Because Jesus didn't just lay down his life when he died on the cross. God raised him back to life. Its claim of the Bible is that it is a historical event you can investigate. You can investigate, did this happen? It invites you to consider the evidence. It is possible to have security in the midst of life's ups and downs. When we look at Psalm 23, it says, yes, it is. Because God has promised eternal life in Jesus. He's given us evidence to see that he's trustworthy when he raised Jesus from the dead, and as we look at the examples of what he's done in the past, that he kept his promises to David, that he kept his promises to Israel. So if you follow Jesus, you can be confident that God will provide, guide, and protect you to ensure that his promises are kept, which is so much more certain than the alternatives that we often look for security in. Just as we finish up, four quick alternatives that offer security. One would be money. You may have read The Barefoot Investor. He's got lots of great tips for managing personal finances. But no matter how good your management strategy is, you still don't have control over markets, over property prices, over the quality of the unit that you have purchased, as many investors in the Green Square Towers have recently found out. We search for security in our leaders, whether it's political leaders or our leaders in the workplace, thinking that a good boss is the answer. But no matter how good a leader we get, they don't last forever, and they actually can't deal with all the problems that we face. They are only finite. Another option I think we often look for security in is relationships. As I was thinking about songs that talk about security, I thought of the Beatles' classic, All You Need Is Love. Now, there are plenty of good things about relationships, but it's not an ultimate thing. Life is not secure. All the problems don't go away just because you have a romantic partner. It is a good thing, but it doesn't offer real security. Or, of course, finally, seeking security in yourself. I don't know what animal you thought of before, but I think one of the reasons I think a shark is a cool animal to be identified with is because it is so self-sufficient. But the reality is, I'm actually very dependent. Even the most self-sufficient person has many things outside of their control. I can't seek security in myself. These things are all good. It is good to be able to enjoy these gifts, but none of them offer ultimate security, whereas Psalm 23 holds out the view that we can have security. We can have confidence in God, even in the ups and downs of life, in the face of suffering and death, because God has done and will keep his promises. Yeah, okay, so the question was, just to make sure I've got it, the Bible claims Jesus is a good shepherd, and people within the church kind of take leadership positions, but many of them fail and do a very poor job. And so a lot of people who aren't followers of Jesus will say it's not worth following him because even these Christian leaders do such a terrible job. So how do you kind of navigate that question? I think a couple of different things. One is, yeah, it's a real problem. It is a sad and really makes me angry when people in a position of Christian leadership and authority fail to follow Jesus. I mean, we all fail in different ways at different times, but in really big ways, and particularly when they continue to reject what Jesus says is a sad and angering thing. I think there was a documentary that came out last year for the Love of God that the Center for Public Christianity put out, and there were a lot of good things in that documentary, and one of the images that they used to kind of help think about it is that we people, even leaders within the Christian community, are striving to follow Jesus. We never do it as well as we can, and so it can be a little bit like someone learning to play Bach on the violin. You don't judge the quality of Bach and his music piece by a poor performance. Someone can perform quite poorly, but that doesn't mean it's a bad piece of music. Actually, you want to consider the piece of music when it's done well and rightly, not by people who are either inexperienced or who have chucked out large chunks of what the music's actually meant to be because they think they know better. And I think that's a helpful illustration for thinking that through when there's lots of Christian leaders who walk away and ignore what Jesus says. To acknowledge that's a tragedy and it shouldn't be being done, but actually it's grounds to say, well, what does Jesus himself actually say? And I think it also, if I'm reflecting on it myself, it means I should be careful about being on my moral high horse and finger wagging at other people because I know I will make mistakes, I will do things wrong, and I will need to keep seeking forgiveness. Because ultimately that's what followers of Jesus do, is they're not living perfectly, they keep seeking forgiveness in Jesus' name. And so it should push me back to say, I need to keep seeking forgiveness myself.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.